Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Dan Lynch joins me. We're going to talk about Excito, the home media server that's really cool. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch. Episode 215, recorded June 20th, 2012. Excito. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Ford, featuring the MyFord mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. The MyFord mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at ford.com/technology. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com. Each week, bringing you the big projects, the small projects, projects you may have never heard of, interesting things that are just out there on the fringe of maybe what you're aware of, all sorts of things in between as well. But each week, Each week, I am joined by a wonderful co-host. This week is no exception, Dan Lynch. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's a pleasure to join you again on the show, Randall. Yeah, it's great to be rough. Here. Thanks for having me.
I have to explain, this show is being taped 2 hours earlier than we normally do because the Twit Network needs to be able to broadcast something about a Windows phone or something coming up. So they're going to be taping right after we're taping this show. So this, I had to get up at 4:30 this morning, and I'm a bit bleary. So if I goof up today, it's because of the time change. It's just a crazy time change for me. So. Dan, it's not a problem for you, though, right?
No, it's really good for me, actually, because, it's 3:30 in the afternoon. So, you can't tell because I blocked the window up to stop any sound from getting in. But, it's lovely mid-afternoon here in the UK.
Very good. Well, we have a really great guest on today. Let's see if I get his name right. Johannes Buch. Speaking to us from somewhere in Europe. I forget the exact location. We'll have to ask him that. But we're going to talk about Excito. Excito is a company that produces hardware. I think it's called the B3. And what it is it's a home network server so that you put your music and maybe your email and stuff, and maybe it's also a web server and stuff. But you basically, this box sits on your home network and provides your streaming media and access to local files and things like that. Started out just as a network-attached storage, but has become very much smarter these times. Now, how it relates to open source is this whole thing was built with Linux and all the standard tools and stuff for that to be able to do all that. And they've also been active in contributing back to the open source community as well. You can even download the entire source code and, edit, modify it and stuff. And we'll talk about the process for that, I'm sure, about how that all works. Dan, have you had a chance to take a look at this?
Yeah, I actually had a look through the website earlier in the week, and I've been looking at the different packages and stuff they've got there. I was interested to try and see if the software and hardware can be separated and if I could run this on my own machine. So that's something it'd be interesting to ask about.
Absolutely. Well, that's going to be great. So we're going to have to definitely check this out. But we have a very important announcement before we get to that. Very important announcement from none other than my good friend, Leo Laporte.
Hello, gentlemen. My name is Leo Laporte, and I'm here to talk to you about something all open source programmers care deeply about. APIs, baby! Have we talked recently about Ford Motor Company? Ford has APIs for its cars. Maybe you didn't know this. The Ford Sync has this app link. That's actually, people speak for an API. I talked to the CTO of Ford a couple of days ago at an event at the... Oh, it's the Ford Motor Company. They wanted to tell you there's an API for that. I was at the Silicon Valley event for them at the Computer History Museum, in which they were talking about the fact that in order to make a car be more up to date, the best way to do it is to consider the car a platform and to create APIs so that people, smart people like you, could create apps for that platform. They've done it themselves, actually, with the My Ford Mobile app. It's kind of a proof of concept, right? For BlackBerry, Android, or iOS, not Linux yet. But there is a website, that works on Linux. They've created this app that talks to your Ford Focus. So if you have the 2012 Ford Focus Electric and you download the app, the electric's in the garage, plugged in, charging. You press a button on the app in the living room and you say, you know, what? How's that Focus doing? 51% charge. Oh, cool. You could press a button that says only charge at the off-peak rates. And it will literally, they download the, as long as you know your utility makes that available via an API, they download that information. It's restful from the PG&E or the, whatever your local utility is. And then they press that one button. You don't have to know. The app will tell the car, okay, this is when it's cheapest to charge. They have the most eco-friendly route, the route that uses the least energy. They'll do things like on the app. Again, you're in your living room. You could tell the car, hey, I'm going to be driving at 8:30 this morning. Would you make sure the cabin is 72 degrees? And it will cool it or heat it to the appropriate temperature before you get in. I mean, I can go on and on. It's so cool. They even will tell you where charging stations are. They have a map on there, Google Map API. So my point being is that Ford understands that times are changing. People want to be connected in their cars. They're making modern cars with modern drivetrains, electric, plug-in hybrid, hybrid, gas, diesel, whatever you need, whatever's right for the application. And on the electric and the soon-to-be the plug-in electric vehicles, they've got these great apps. They've also got the website with leaderboards, so you know who's saved. Literally, you can find out who's saved the most CO2 with their Ford Focus Electric. It's kind of cool stuff. It's actually great because it encourages people to save the planet. I am a big fan of Ford. And if you're a programmer, if you're an open source geek, you ought to be too. Ford.com/technology. Find out more. And if you're in the market for a new car, I think you ought to go to your local Ford dealer and test drive one. If you can, if you're interested in the electric, I would go to your EV certified Ford dealer, test drive that 2012 Ford Focus. Bring your smartphone along so you can install the My Ford mobile app. And we thank Ford so much for supporting Floss Weekly. Now, my friends, I take you back to that time and place not so long ago in which you were geeking out with Randall. Randall?
Leo, thank you very much for that piece of important information. And now, let's go ahead and bring on our guest. Johannes Buch, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Did I pronounce your first name right? I've probably been screwing it up for the last few weeks.
Well, yeah, I think you did. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, good, good. Right. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm right now in Malmö, which is South Sweden, next to Copenhagen, which people usually know about. Yeah,
I've been to Copenhagen. Yeah, in fact, I think just recently, like last October. No, it was earlier than that. Maybe it was like 3 years ago. It all blurs together, all travels and everything. But yeah, it's a beautiful city, definitely. I gave sort of an overview of Excito at the beginning of the show, and I probably got it pretty good because I did some research on the show already. So, but why don't you go ahead and give us like the 30,000-foot view of what Excito is about and maybe even a little bit about how it got started.
Sure. So Excito, or Excito as we say here, is a company built by open source people, and our aim is to make everyday digital life easier. We have kind of a high-level goal to simplify the life of using media in homes and on your phone and so on, and to provide services so that everyone can use this kind of stuff. That's the high-level version.
Okay, well, maybe go a little bit lower than that. Like, what's the project we're actually talking about today?
The project is mainly how we use open source software to make a fully functional hardware home server, and how we utilize open source software and open source projects to make consumer products.
Okay, so let's start with the home server. What does it consist of, and how would I be using it?
Well, it's a hardware device. It's big size of a, you could say, a small printed pocketbook, and it's a small CPU, small power efficient CPU, meaning that we don't have any fans. And you put this one in your home and fill it up with your content, like pictures, movies, photos, music, of course, your email, your work files, everything. And this kind of creates your personal cloud, which means that all of this content, this digital content, is available to you wherever you are and whenever you need it, on all platforms, on all screens.
Hmm. Now, Johannes, I see that it's based on Linux as well, which is Yeah, which is obviously great news to me. I see that you're based on Debian Squeeze. So what made you choose Debian Squeeze as a base for this?
Well, Debian is a well-proven operating system. And since we're aiming a lot, our customers are non-techie people. Our customers are not Linux geeks or Debian geeks. So we need something stable. And Debian is known to be the stable distribution. They're quite careful before launching updates and stuff. So this is one of the main reasons. And another one is, of course, that it's quite easy to use with. It has a lot of high-level tools, and it has a great community. It's a lot of applications that we can utilize as is.
Mm. Yeah, and I was curious, actually, which branch of Debian you base your thing on. I'm guessing it's Debian Stable from what you're saying, which can cause some problems I found with some projects, because Debian, fantastic project. I love Debian, before anyone gets upset. Some of my best friends wear kilts, if anyone understands that. Debian developer kilts and things. One of the things you get with it is because they are so ultra sure that they make sure stuff is stable. Some of the packages can get quite out of date in the stable release. Is that been any kind of a problem for you? Because I would imagine media servers, you need to be quite up to date.
You actually hit a point there. Yeah, you're right. We have had issues with that, but it also means it's not very difficult for us to backport newer stuff from the unstable releases if we need to. In the few cases we've needed to, we've done that, and that's like a 20-minute operation normally. So it's no big issue for us.
Mm. And I was looking at through some of the open source stuff you've got on your website, and I'm curious to know, could I run the software on another device? Is that something that you would be happy for people to do, or would you rather that they, you know, tailor it to this one device, and you'd rather that they get the actual hardware from you as well?
Exactly. Well, yeah, that question has many answers. But of course, if people like, they can install this on any computer. Mm-hmm. We run on an ARM platform, so it's not a 5-minute job to port it to x86 or to run it on any PC. So it's kind of special. Our hardware platform is kind of special. Mm. And on the other hand, the experience isn't full if you don't have the hardware. That's how it is. So,
right,
so
okay.
of course, we like people to use the hardware. So,
because I was looking actually, and before I had a look at the hardware and realized that you were targeting ARM specifically, I was looking at the packages and things that you've got. So, if I were to try and install this on, say, just an old machine that I've got around, I'd need to recompile it for x86 or something like that, which sounds like quite a intensive job, I'm imagining.
Exactly. Yeah, and I suppose it could be. It's probably quite some work to do it, although not impossible, of course, if you're a skilled developer.
Yeah, it's another great reason for you guys to base on Debian, because Debian supports so many different architectures. I noticed that you've got a PowerPC version and an ARM version, and a lot of Linux distributions have dropped support for PowerPC now. Ubuntu doesn't support it, and many other distributions. So was that another reason that Debian made sense for you guys, that it can run it on so many different platforms?
Yeah, you're right. It was. We right now we have two products that are live that are still supported by us. It's the B2, and then it's the B3, which we have now. And the B2 is PowerPC. The B3 is ARM. Mm. And all of this makes it kind of easy. When we release software updates, we release it for both platforms at once. So it's very easy.
Hmm. Okay, so tell us a bit about the B3, which is the product, the box that you've got for sale right now. It's Can you give us a bit of a rundown on it? It's an ARM-based system.
Yeah, it's an ARM-based system. It's a 1.2 gigahertz ARM CPU, and it's important to remember this device is headless. It has no screen outputs, so it's not a PC. It's more of a NAS, for people who know what that means. It's a home server. It's as I said, a 1.2 gigahertz CPU, which is optimized for network activities. So we've chosen a CPU platform that's fast for file transfers and file protocol encryptions and that kind of stuff, as opposed to fast at graphics encoding and that kind of stuff. It has half gig of memory and up to a 3 terabyte built-in hard drive. So it's quite a competent server platform.
And as you say, it comes with a lot of stuff on there, like Apache web server and all that, and PHP 5 and all that kind of stuff. So, do you know if people are using them for anything? I don't know, any more kind of creative uses, like running a little web server on there or running a website off it or something?
Exactly. Yeah, they are. They are. We have quite of a vivid community where people discuss what they're using it for. So we know quite in detail what people are doing. So just to explain to the people listening, we do have services like we have a web front end with a web file manager. We have a web music player, and we have DLNA and all that kind of home server stuff people expect. But apart from that, it is still an open Linux system, and we run our stuff based on Apache and MySQL and PHP and so on. Which means, and we even provide the root password in the user's manual, which means that anyone can do whatever they like with this product. So people install all kind of stuff. We do have people installing home automation. A home automation framework controlling their lights. We have someone at the university here who is monitoring traffic with this device, using it for, they're finding collisions or incidents, that kind of stuff. So the device has become a very versatile platform to do whatever people like. It's also quite commonly used as a development server for small development companies and so on, because it's so easy to install, like CVS or Git or whatever people are using, in some kind of bug tracker or whatever.
Hey, yeah. So I just heard you say that the root password is in the manual. Now I presume people change it right away, right?
Well, depending on what you mean, we don't provide. Because the device has a built-in router and firewall as well. So it has like two Ethernet ports where you connect one to the internet and you connect the other one to your home network. It also has Wi-Fi to create your home network, Wi-Fi access point. In any case, the command line interface, the SSH interface, is only enabled on the LAN side, on the local side, by default, which means that root access is not available from the internet.
Okay, but it does mean that somebody coming over to visit you, or somebody driving by that picks up your Wi-Fi signal, knowing the default root password, would be able to get in, right?
Not even that, no. We also inhibited root login over SSH. So what they need to do is create a user and cross the checkbox saying allow SSH access, log in as that user, and then type SU to become root.
Okay. Well, why do you even have a root password at all then? Why don't you just use a sudo instead? That way it's the user's password rather than a root password.
Good question. I really can't answer that. It's an old design decision before my time, so I really don't know. But both work fine, so I guess.
Glad I could be of assistance in that. I mean, it's been a long time actually since I've typed SU, because I just immediately install sudo on all the machines I have. Sudo. I know I've been pronouncing that wrong for all these years. And that way the password you're using is the password you're coming from, not the password you're going to. And so you don't have to have a common question in front of all that. I'm actually sort of curious about the history of your company. I actually see that you've been doing this or been involved since 2002. So what was the original problem you were solving, and how did this all come about?
Yeah, it's kind of a long story, but I'll start from the beginning. In 2002, me and three other guys who were friends and we worked together at that time, we decided we wanted to make building blocks for the industry. There was a lack on the market for good building blocks, like embedded system building blocks. Like today we have the Raspberry Pi. That kind of stuff didn't exist back in those days. So we did a few versions of ARM9 development kits, you could call it, or building blocks for the industry. And then a few years later, one of us came up with a brilliant idea of making a home server out of that technology. Because in 2003 and 2004, people had big tower servers, old PCs essentially, at home serving FTP or direct connect downloads or whatever it might be. So home servers at that time was like a big PC tower. We thought, why it doesn't have to be like that. Home servers are not, they don't need a lot of CPU power. So we built a home server based on an ARM9, which literally used less than 1 watt of power, no fans, and a very small device. with a built-in hard drive. And in hindsight, we now understand that that was the world's first NAS. We didn't realize it back then, but it actually was.
Wow.
So that's where we come from. And now we are on generation 3 of that product, the Exceedo B3. And we've filled it up with a ton of stuff since then, but that's the history, yeah.
So the device you were building, the first version of it was just simply, you know, forgive me for not kind of understanding how NAS is being instructed, but it just basically exports a file system for NFS mount, or was there some other protocol involved?
Yeah, something like that. We had FTP and we had Samba for Windows users and that kind of stuff. But essentially, that's what we did. Yeah.
Now I'm looking at the current product description. There's a lot more things in there, like even like iTunes export and a bunch of things. Why don't you talk about all the different interfaces there are now?
The features, yeah. We usually say we have like 30 or 35 different services running, and and the meaning of all of them is to provide means for accessing your digital content. So it's we have, of course, Samba for Windows users, FTP, SSH, NFS. We have AFP for Mac users, and so on. We also have remote access. So we have a web interface for file management. We have a downloader service for people who use torrents for downloading big files. Email service, email server. We have Postfix, fetch mail, and that kind of stuff. We have a webmail service, Horde. Yeah, it's difficult to remember them all because there are quite many, and so on. The device also has a Wi-Fi access point and a firewall, so we have configuration settings and stuff for that. We have smartphone applications, of course, for remote access for that kind of content. So yeah, it's quite a filled up product.
So this started as an idea to put together, I think you said you put together 100 of these because it sort of worked out nice. Did you realize it would turn into the company that it's become?
No, not at all. And actually, it was more of a hobby the first years, as most mm-hmm. companies start, I believe. The first product, the Baba One, that we called it back then, we on chance built 100 units because we figured people might like it. So we built 100 units, we put it up on a website, and swoosh, they were gone. And those 100 were quite labor-intensive. It was like a hardware hack, you could say, out of existing metal parts and so on. So we spent huge amounts of time in my garage putting them together and packing them into boxes and sending them away to customers all over the world.
What was your labor rate at that point, given that you probably had to pay quite a bit for the hardware and you probably couldn't sell it for very much? Were you making at least minimum wage, like burger flipping money, or was it even less than that?
No, even less than that, yeah. We all four of us worked full-time at other jobs at that time. So this was a night and weekend labor for us and our friends and our girlfriends.
Wow. And I hope it's a little better than that now, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Now, like 6 years later, we live all this. We have a company with approximately 15 people now. And we build servers and a few other products I really can't talk about for special customers. So it's become a real thing. And that's extremely fun.
Now, your choice of using an open source operating system, it's probably obvious because you wanted to keep this low cost. But why didn't you go, let's say, with just having like a little Windows server instead?
Yeah, for many reasons. Cost is, of course, one thing. Our belief, you could say, is another thing. We all are open source and Linux-y people from the start. But it turned out to be a very wise choice because essentially we did this product with these 35 services from 1.5 or maybe 2 developers. So very little work ended up in 35 or 40 different services that really work. And the reason of that is, of course, open source. It means that we can search the open source world for the best applications available. And we can test them and adapt them and put our UI on top. And then we have made a very complex and good feature available for end users who don't understand technology. So that's essentially our development.
So at this point, you're probably not developing a community around updating and modifying the software. It's probably just your two developers, right? Rather than trying to get some sort of community around the software, right?
Yeah, we never intentionally tried to get our community to develop stuff for us, but it happened to be that way anyways. We have a very active and loyal community who has helped us with a lot of stuff, both ideas but also pure developments, which we've integrated into the product.
How does that work for workflow? Do you have an open repository, or and you give away commit bits, or do you just take patches from people?
Both. We since some time now we have an open repository. So yeah, it's become quite much easier. We just have a GitHub share.
And how do people, what's the governance like then? Who decides what's in the next release? Is that that's probably you, I presume.
Yeah, it is me right now. of course with input from customers and from management and so on. But yeah, it is me deciding. With discussion with the developers. Because my developers or our developers are the open source experts here. So I listen carefully to them.
Hmm. I'm curious actually, because as a company with a product that you've taken to market and so on, you must have to be quite. I'm trying to think of a good word for this. You must have to keep quite a tight control over the development process and stuff, because obviously your product is paramount at the end of the day, and you want to have full control over that.
You mean that we need to be in control of it actually working at the end of the day?
Yeah. Well, because, obviously that would make sense.
Yeah. Because you're right. It is essential. People do put their family photos on our product, and they do trust us with their very valuable and private data. And that's the priority number one for us, to make sure that our product works 24/7, and that if something fails, you should have good ways to recover content or to repair hardware and so on. So you're right. Mm. And that also has implications of software development. If we release updates, we need to be 100% sure that we don't mess anything up. So it's we have to think like consumer electronics developers rather than open source project developers.
Mm. And you mentioned a key point there, that people are putting their personal photos and things that are important to them on this device. So how do they back it up? Will it back up to something like Amazon S3 or some online storage, or can you hook it into any of those things to make it into the bigger kind of cloud, if you like?
Yeah. We have several options for the user. We do sell an accessory, which is an eSATA hard drive storage. With that one, we could do RAID, or we could do backup, or we could do sync. we also have a backup feature, which is scheduled and incremental and everything, towards any third-party server, which could be Amazon S3 or any of those services, or another B3 at your friend's house, or any Linux server anywhere.
Mm. And it seems to me there's a lot of these devices, similar kinds of devices around right now. So how would you compare your device to something like Tenido Plug that we've had on the show before, which is trying to build a kind of a personal cloud, if you like, and the things like the Freedom Box? We have a question from the IRC. Evan Pro wanted to know how this compares to something like the Freedom Box project. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, I've seen it briefly. I'm not 100% familiar with it, but it is. Yeah, we do have competitors, both hardware and cloud services. And I think I also want to say much of those competitors are really good products. For instance, one of our main competitors is the Synology network attached storage products, and they are a really good product. They're good, decent hardware, and they have good services as well. But we differ quite a lot from them. They are more for techie people. We are more for the average family mom who wants to store their photos.
Right. Okay. So of course, keeping the interface and so on simple to use and making it as you say, as easy to use as possible must be a big thing for you guys.
Yeah, it is. It is. And this is where we spend most of our effort, is to take these incredibly advanced features such as backup that can be very, very advanced for techie people, and providing that with a very slim and easy to use front end or user interface. That's our main challenge, and that's where I think we differ from others.
And you can control all of this through the web interface, you were saying. So would that be the best way for someone to do it? Just plug it in, switch it on, connect it to your network or whatever you're going to do, and then manage it through the web interface? Is that how people mostly use it?
Yeah, it is. You plug it in and you start it up, and you just print B3 in your browser, and then it finds the B3, and there you can do anything, both consuming the content, like watching photos or listening to music, but also control and manage content, setting up backups or managing network settings or whatever you like. and this of course also works remotely. We have a DNS service, if you like. So and with every purchase, you get a free domain name, which always points to your B3 wherever you are.
Oh, that is very cool. So you can access it from outside the home as well. That's very cool. What about, I noticed you mentioned briefly mobile apps before, and I noticed as I was kind of searching through your website before that you have got an advert for an Android developer up right now. I don't know if any Android developers watching are interested in this. Are mobile applications to manage this something that you're really interested in?
Yeah, mostly to consume content and not so much to manage. We have a vision, and as smartphones are getting more and more common, it's kind of natural for us to make photo sync apps and photo viewing apps, and the same with videos, of course, and music. So yeah, both for Android and iPhone.
Excellent. And I noticed that you support things like DNLA, which is, you know, probably the most popular protocol for video streaming and stuff around the home. I was curious about some of the stuff that like TV recording that a lot of people do on, say, Myth TV and things like that and under Linux. Now, I know you don't have a TV tuner built into the device, but I was curious as to whether someone could use a USB TV tuner or something and maybe install Myth TV. Would that be something that you would work on this device, do you think?
Myth TV, I'm not sure, but I suppose that needs a screen, right? It's not web-based, because remember, we are headless, so Myth TV probably won't work. But using it as a recorder works, and we do have people on the forum who has done that with the DVB-T recorders, just saving the MPEG stream to hard drive, and you have a movie. So yeah, it's quite easy.
Oh, very cool. And Randall's just reminding me that there is iTunes sharing as well as DNLA for those people who use Apple devices and stuff. So what's the kind of the take-up of this been like then? Have you you said that in the first year, I know this is going back a long way, you made 100 and then you had 1,000 and so on. So is it just growing exponentially more than you imagined?
Yeah, you could say that. It still is, yeah. I can't disclose sales figures right now because, natural reasons. But we've sold to more than 50 countries, and that to me is very, very, it's extremely fun. So it is. And it is growing. We're selling more every year.
Excellent. And do you have to do translations and stuff for all these countries? Do you get community help with that kind of stuff? Because obviously, I know there's only like menus and stuff, but all these things need to be translated into various languages, I would imagine.
You're right. Right now we have three languages, English, Swedish, and German. But we also have a few experimental languages where users have contributed translations. And we are working right now on a few more languages. So it's coming soon with more languages.
Excellent. Because that strikes me as an area that the community could really get involved with, translations and so on. Obviously, people all over the world can really help out with that. That'd be very cool. Cool. All right. And so I see also, I was curious about your kind of, you mentioned the fact that you build on a lot of open source software. We've talked about Linux, Debian, and so on. And there's so many other things on there, obviously PHP and all of these things, Apache. So you have quite a strong relationship with the open source community. So do you contribute stuff upstream to projects that you've worked with?
Yeah, we do. We do. We try to contribute as much as we possible can. We have 95% of the B3 is open source, so everyone can grab code and continue working on it if they like. apart from that, we offer discounts to open source developers. If they want to purchase one of our products, they get a €50 discount. And we also try, sometimes we've given bounties to developers or maybe community forum contributors. So we really try to do whatever we can to keep open source alive.
And actually, you mentioned something that I was going to bring up there. I saw on the website, you've got the €50 discount for open source developers. So how do people qualify for that? How do they qualify as an open source developer? Could anyone come along and say, I'm an open source developer?
but that's the beauty of open source. It's every open source project has a web link. So they can just say, I did this and I'm this guy and sends a link to their project and we can check. And generally we trust people, so it's not a big issue.
And I don't know if you'll be able to tell us this. Again, it's kind of sales figures and stuff, but has the take-up for that been good? Have you had many people coming along and taking up that offer?
We have a few, yeah. Perhaps we didn't advertise it good enough. We will do a campaign on that soon. But yeah, we've had a few, like maybe 50 or so who do that. So yeah, it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And you've been through a few different hardware revisions and so on, and you've got the B3 right now. So are you working on any new devices, or what's the kind of the big stuff that you got coming up?
Yeah, we are. We always are working on new stuff. Both retail products, which are coming up soon. I really can't tell you any details, of course, as usual, until we release stuff. But yeah, the B4, everyone can guess that the B4 is coming. And it is, with a beefed up hardware and a lot of new software services as well. I can't say when, but yeah, we're working on it.
Excellent. And this is a slightly strange question, but I was curious to know, why did you call it Bubba? Is there a reason behind that name?
Yeah, there is. And it's a long story. There is a character in a film, I think from early 90s, which is Baba Hotep. The film is named Baba Hotep. It's a terrible movie. And for some reason, that name stuck, and we had it as a working name for the first project before we decided to make a product out of it. And it stuck so hard that we couldn't get rid of it. So the first product was called Baba, and the second one, Baba 2. And then we figured that if we were ever going to expand to the US, Baba was probably not the best name we've heard. So we decided to change to B3 right now.
Right. Okay, so that's an important tip for people who are picking working names for projects.
On the other hand, I must say that Baba has been an extremely good name because it sticks. People remember it.
And it's probably distinct and Googleable. That's always the handy thing too. You know, it's tough now to pick a name that isn't colliding with some other name. You know, I mean, all the good names are taken. Is always the
yeah. If you thing. Don't have like 20 letters and so on, yeah, you're right.
Now, are you again? Don't just say what you can say. But how's the operating company actually organized? Are you like the president or the CTO or something?
I am the CTO. Yeah, so I run the technical side of the company. The other management and financial stuff, we have got new people to do. And that's because we the founders are all engineers, and this is what we like to work with.
Now, were you an entrepreneur before this, or is this really all a new foray for you?
No, it's new for me, yeah. I've only worked in big companies before.
And what's the most unusual lesson that you've learned as a result of now being part of a growing company rather than being part of a little tiny person in a real company? Big company, not real.
The major lesson, I don't know. It's so much more fun, I have to say. It's so much more fun. It's so rewarding. It's so rewarding to see your products on the shelf somewhere. It's, yeah, really.
I can definitely relate to that, having seen my books on shelves all over the world, that to be able to walk up and actually touch it and go, look, that's something I did a while back. This is really cool. So I can definitely relate to that. And anybody that's listening that wants to be inspired, please just, you know, follow your dreams and try something out, and things happen. It's been pretty, pretty cool for that. So you're coming out with new releases, obviously, and you don't want to talk too much about that, right? But yeah, there's obviously going to be something new coming from that. How much more is working with open source? Has it been difficult for you at all? Are there issues that have come about because of the particular licensing or anything?
Yeah, good question. Not really, not yet. We have been in discussion with customers who asks those questions, because they might be scared that their stuff will be open sourced and so on, but it doesn't really work that way, so it is not a problem in the real world.
I mean, there's obviously you probably don't have a lot of secret sauce to make this box work. I mean, it's just basically getting all the drivers to feed right and all that sort of stuff. But is there anything that you really sort of wish that you could have kept closed source in this project but couldn't because of the GPL?
No, not at all. Not at all, and you're right, and for several reasons. As I said, I'd say 80% of the software in it is already open source, so we didn't do it ourselves. So why would we ever want to keep that a secret? And the other stuff, the only stuff we don't open source is the graphics, the graphical front end, because yeah, that's where we invested some money. So no, not really.
Okay,
and it's not a big issue, because we really like the open source world, so it's more of a good feeling for us to be able to do that.
Well, that's really a grand of you to be able to do that. We've chatted a lot about all sorts of different things about this. I want to make sure we haven't missed something though. Is there anything else you'd like to make sure that our audience is aware of?
Not that I can remember. No.
Good. I was just looking at my list going, I think I've covered almost everything I can. And of course, you know what will happen is we're going to send you away in a minute. And then I'm going to say, I should have asked him this. But it's okay. It happens in every show. It's like, I do a lot of prep. I do a lot of questions ahead of time to make sure that we're all going to flow smoothly and cleanly. And I think we pretty much covered the box of this, which is that you've got this really great piece of hardware. And it's good for lots of different uses for people at home and small offices maybe. And so where do people find out more about this?
Exito.com. Okay. Exito.com, yeah. And then we have a web shop, and we also have a feature list and so on.
Is this available in stores anywhere?
It is, yeah. We have retail in Northern Europe, in Sweden, Denmark, and Norway, and Germany, and a few other countries in Northern Europe.
But not in the U.S. yet. I can't go touch it here, right?
I think it's on Amazon, but I'm not sure. It has been at least.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I can get it from Amazon. In fact, it's probably in Prime, so I can probably get it like free the next day or whatever. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. And we also have a worldwide web shop ourselves, so you can always buy it there.
Of course, I wouldn't get the €50 discount. I think I'm provably a open source guy, so I'd have to get it right from you to get that, right?
Exactly. Correct.
Okay. And just ballpark range of prices. I don't want to make this sound like an ad, but I want to kind of get a sense of, you know, are we talking €100, €500, or for like just a basic box that can hold maybe a terabyte of my music or something?
It depends. We have from €250 up to, I think, €450, depending on if you want the Wi-Fi access point and depending on the hard drive size.
Very good. That's a good ballpark. Okay, let me know. That's great. That's a really good price point for that stuff, because I'm sure that's no more expensive than, say, a good CD or a DVD player or whatever. So it would fit really nicely into people's home equipment system. All right. Well, a couple more questions that if I don't ask, now people are going to yell at me. So favorite text editor, Emacs or VI or something else?
As I said, I'm no context. I use context mostly.
Okay. Okay, I don't know what that is, but I'll just presume you do. And Sam,
I'm a Windows user. I have to be a Windows user because of the CTO stuff. So
And so you're probably not much of a scripter. So the favorite scripting language question might not come in, but I'll ask it anyway. Favorite scripting language?
Python.
Okay, well, another one for the other column. All right, that'll work. Great. Well, I really appreciate you coming on talking about this. I know the chat room had a lot of excitement about this. This is great. This is obviously something that a lot of people are looking for, especially like a no moving parts sort of thing that can just sit there in the corner of the, sitting next to their cable modem, whatever, fiber connection, and be able to deliver content throughout the house. This is really cool. Thanks for being on our show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Very good. So that was, I got to scroll. That was Johannes Buch talking to us about Exito. Dan, what'd you think?
Yeah, a very interesting project, actually. And one of the things that people in the IRC were asking about was the comparisons with other devices, because this is such a crowded space. There are so many of these devices out there. I mentioned the Tenido plug and the Freedom Box, which is slightly different, but, you know, there's so many of these things out there. But it strikes me this is a bit more of a kind of a server device, if you like. It seems to be more geared towards being a server rather than just a little toy to have at home and play around with. I like the fact that you get a free domain name with every purchase. I didn't know that before you mentioned it. That's quite interesting. So you can actually hook it up to your domain name and stuff like that. So it does look very powerful, actually. A very cool device.
And I like that this is, you know, we talk so much about the theoretical here on Floss Weekly about things where people are, you know, building open source stuff and building it just as software projects. But to actually take a look at a product, a real hardware thing that got created and leveraged open source to be able to produce it at a price point that makes sense for people to be able to buy for home. I can't imagine what it would cost to put a licensed copy of Windows in each one of these things, nor the headaches actually at the same time, because I know people with their Windows server boxes not particularly happy with that. So this is pretty nice that he's actually built up a business around using open source in an applicative sort of way. And in a way that, I'm sometimes harping about how the GPL requires you to turn stuff back in, but sounds like he has no problem with that, because he really doesn't have, the secret sauce isn't the software that he's running. The secret sauce is the hardware and the company that he's built around it. So it works pretty well for that.
Yeah, it does sound like it. And it's an interesting journey as well, I think, because I meet so many people who've got into open source software through, I don't know, maybe using a package someday and finding it interesting. But I find it really interesting that that he came to open source software through hardware, if you like, through being a hardware guy and then saying, we need the software for this hardware. What's the best, you know, best way to do this? And then finding out that open source was the way to do it. So that's very, very cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this is wonderful. I'm glad he came on the show. And I think actually I may be placing an order for one of these. It sounds like a lot of fun. So we have, speaking of upcoming guests, which is my bad segue for the day, we don't have many yet. I was dragging my feet and not actually sending out a bunch of email until like the last couple of days. So we have a lot of people looking at dates, though. But we do have a couple of upcoming guests already on the books. Just added to the schedule, in fact, since last week. Drools Planner. It's a piece of software, as far as I can tell, written in Java. It handles very interesting and complex problems, including things like the bin packing problem, where you have maybe you have five disks and you have hundreds of files, and you want to make sure that each disk contains the most number of files so you have the minimum amount of wasted space. It's a tough problem to solve, and apparently they've got some great software to do that, and apparently in resource allocation, that sort of thing. So this might be a bit geeky of a show, but stay with us on it, and you'll probably hear a lot more about how that all works. And then also added to the schedule since last week, we have Scalar, S-C-A-L-R, which sadly is another cloud thing. It was so nice to get out of the cloud for a change. I actually talk about something hardware this time, but we are having a more cloud show. Scalar is apparently a bunch of software that automatically manages cloud deployment, things like that. That should be a lot of fun. Again, like I said, we have lots of email flying to get to the rest of Q3 booked. On the very short list, I've got a couple of really exciting projects. Just looking for the date here. Open Bravo. Which is, nope, that's not the one I wanted. OpenROV, there. OpenROV is a submersible. Like we had OpenPilot last year where it was about these quadcopters and things. OpenROV is about things that go under the water, also similar to that. There we kind of go. Free Switch is on the short list. They're looking at dates. We've got Falcon programming language. Kind of nice. We haven't had a programming language on for a while. And a bunch of other people on the short list. Go to twit.tv/floss. You can see the spreadsheet linked from there to show what's coming up. You can also follow us on Floss Weekly on Google Plus and at Floss Weekly on both Identica and Twitter to find out when I'm adding guests to the schedule or when I'm talking about this upcoming guest for the day. Just a reminder, next week's show will be taping at 9:30, back to your original time, not 7:30 like this show's being taped at for all sorts of crazy reasons. But starting on July 11th, we will be taping at 8:30 in the morning in Pacific time, which is an hour earlier from our long-standing schedule. They are doing some shuffling on the Twit Network and putting us back just an hour. That's not too bad, I guess. It's not as early to get up as it was for today's show, which is really ungodly early. I'm personally, if you follow me at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, and I'm also on Google Plus at Randall L. Schwartz. I talk a lot there. I put a lot of funny things every day on that thing. And I've got like 16,000 Google Plus followers now, so I'm pretty happy about that. I'll be in Portland for OSCON July 16th to 20th, and we're going to do a live Floss Weekly from there with Simon Phipps. I'll be in Porto Alegre the following week, July 25th to 28th, and maybe somebody else is going to run the show for me when I'm down there. And then I'll be in Rio the following week to talk with the guys at Rio Pearlmongers and basically just hang out and have a good time at Copacabana Beach. That's enough plugging for me. Dan, where can people find you?
The best place to find me is at danlynch.org, which you can see at the bottom of the screen if you're watching the video feed. You can find all kinds of stuff on there. I've recently started posting, because you might see if you're watching the feed again, there's a guitar in the background there. I've recently started posting some acoustic tracks to YouTube, and you can find them on danlynch.org, links to the band and all kinds of other stuff. So just go there and you'll be able to find all of the stuff there. Very quickly, I just want to mention the fact that we've got OgCamp coming up, which is an event that I helped to organise in the UK. It's the biggest open source event in the UK. Now we've grown year on year, and now we're up to about 500 people, and it's become one of the biggest events, open source events in the UK. It's in August 2012. It's going to be on the 18th and 19th of August. It's in Liverpool, which is where I'm based, up in the northwest of England. So if you can get here, have a look. It's a free event, free to attend, but we do like people to kind of sign up through Eventbrite so we have an idea of tickets and how many people are coming so we don't run out of drinks, because that would be bad. People get very upset. So go to ogcamp.org if you want to check that out. And very quickly, if you're interested in open source software and its use in healthcare, which is a big subject for me that I've been trying to push, there's some friends of mine are doing an NHS Hack Day. If you go to nhshackday.com, you can find the information there. It's in September. It's on the 22nd and 23rd of September, and we're encouraging anybody involved in the medical profession or anybody who's a developer who just wants to come along and help help people inside the NHS to kind of understand open source and why they should use it more and share code between themselves.
Very good, Dan. Very good. I just want to say two more things. I forgot I was in the earlier part of the message there. Last week, I was at YAPSE North America, the Perl conference. That's the low-cost Perl conference alternative to going to OSCON. And they had the largest group ever in Madison, Wisconsin. We had something like 450 people. We completely maxed out their facilities there at the university. So very exciting. And I picked up a few items for upcoming Floss Weekly shows, including, if you want to go check this out, it sort of was a little preliminary to we're going to get the guys on. They're actually doing this. There's this web search meta site called DuckDuckGo.com. And what's really great is that they have these Bang shortcuts, you exclamation mark, maybe followed by IG for image Google. And those shortcuts are actually pluggable in the sense that you can fork their server-side code and their server-side testing things and write your own little Perl plugin or shell plugin or whatever and test it out and send it to them. And like they have some 200 of these shortcuts, but maybe 50 of them have been user-contributed by using open source and actually being able to generate more things. So here's a meta search site that's really, really cool to use, and it just gets smarter every day because they're taking pull requests in from people who have invented new plugins for searching new kinds of things. So very, very cool. It's one of the guys I saw last week because it's all written in Perl and behind the scenes. Another one that's also pretty exciting is Staccato, which is a service from ActiveState that does some sort of similar thing to what CloudShift was doing. So there's a lot of good things coming along, lots of interesting stuff. Oh, and the biggest one, I think, was the Yahoo has got a new sort of deployment package called Pogo that they're open sourcing in a few weeks. And that's a great way for rolling out over hundreds of machines, being able to do like a rolling reboot or whatever it takes to load new things in. So we'll try to get all three of those guys on the show at some time in the future, but very interesting stuff that I saw there. So that was great. Second thing is, a couple times you might have heard us say, well, the chat room talked about this, chat room talked about that. We do have a live chat room during the time this show is taping. That's why it's important that I'm telling you the taping dates so that you can tell when you can be in and actually get questions injected into our show. So feel free to come into the chat room during the taping times. Again, when I announce the show upcoming, I usually announce the time as well, so you can follow it that way. The timings are always based on Pacific Time U.S., which is GMT minus 7 in the summer and GMT minus 8 in the winter. I think that covers all my notes. Dan, once again, thank you for being my co-host on today's show.
No problem. It's always a pleasure. I'll see you again soon.
Absolutely. I'm sure you will. And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.